Hey, this is Rob. This is episode 139 of the Folly Coffee Podcast. Let's get it brewing. All right. I am sitting down with the newly named executive chef of W.A. Frost. You may know it if you've been there in St. Paul. Incredible food menu, absolutely epic patio. Now, I was kind of doing a little research on your background with W.A. Frost, and I think it might be one of the coolest things I've heard that you once were there as a line cook nearly a decade ago.
Correct.
And now you are coming back and taking over as the executive chef. That's got to be a really cool feeling.
Welcome home story, yeah.
How did that whole process come together?
So I was working in the... Somebody reached out. I believe the GM of the restaurant reached out. And he's like, hey, your name came up in a conversation. We see you're still cooking, doing good things. You want to come in and chit-chat about an opportunity here? And I'm like, all right, well, I never like to pass up an opportunity. So let's go hear it out. Let's go see what's going on. And they're like, yeah, our chef kind of left abruptly. Whatever, there's a story there, but I don't know all the details. So they were kind of chefless for a couple months. And they were looking and they were kind of figuring out what they wanted to do and get back to what they were known for. And they're like, hey, your name came up. You interested in doing this thing or what? I'm like, yeah, I have great memories of W.A. Frost. And just walking in there was just a flashback, you know, kind of like going back to your old high school. You're like, oh, I recognize these hallways and closets. And
yeah, except,
there's still some familiar faces in there and everything.
Except when, when I've gone back to high school to visit, you're like, oh, it feels like I'm a high schooler again.
Right,
then you look around and realize, oh, no, everything's changed.
You're like, oh, yeah. You walk by the mirror, you're like, oh, yeah, I'm that old guy that's walking down the...
So how was it kind of a shift from, like, being a line cook there to realize it's like, oh, I'm running the show here now?
Because
that's two different kind of ways you're walking through the door in terms of just... On the line cook side, like, I've got my duties. I just got to get these done. And then the executive chef side, you've got not only...
You're handing out the duties.
You got to hand in all the duties, including running an entire team, kind of, especially when you're taking over, you're kind of looking at the menu. What are we keeping the same? What are we changing? How did you approach it that first time kind of walking back in as executive chef?
I kind of just went back in and, you know, I'm going to get my feet wet. I'm going to see what's going on, what they're doing. And then, you know, how do I want to make it my own, but still keep it what it's known for. And I'm still kind of in that process. It's only been a couple months so far, but you know, just getting to know who's there, all the players, that kind of thing. And then just now I think spring menu is going to be like the big rollout. This is Grant, he's here, you know, that kind of thing. I think that's what we want it to be. I hope that's what it is. And they're like, oh wow. But yeah, I think we're trying to get to that point.
Yeah, you mentioned when we're walking in December, or when we're walking in here that you took over in December, and it's
it was
like
a long hallway, but I don't think it was that long.
So you've got holidays, you've got banquets, you've got catering, you've got all these things going on. So I imagine that it's kind of like, let's just get through this crazy busy time, and then spring, especially with the patio, you got to roll out the new menu with that epic patio.
Yeah, because they're going to come whether or not the menu's ready or not. But yeah, I mean, I started a little into December, and it was really nonstop, just with holiday parties, catering events, just, you know, everybody coming out for all the reasons that you go out for holidays, which is great. It was busy, it was nuts, but it was like, you're ready and you want to make the menu your own and you want to put your name, your stamp on there. And it's like, well, I'm actually just going to try to keep the business open at the moment, you know, because it's like, you got hired and everybody's looking at you to make sure all the parties go well and the ordering is done. And
so when you're looking at that task, because when I picture, if I'm walking through the door going, okay, I'm now in charge of this menu, it's a certain level, I mean, I'm picturing myself here, that it's a level of pressure that I'm like, maybe excited, but also like, this is now a tremendous amount of pressure that this like really well-established restaurant with a great reputation, I'm now controlling the menu. Kind of what are those range of emotions you're feeling as you're putting together a menu, and where do you really decide to start?
Yeah, and it's weird because it's like, yeah, just come in and do your own menu. But it's like you actually have to learn all the things that are already happening because you have to keep some of those going. You can't just say, hey, we're stopping this and starting this, because there's no break in the restaurant. It's like you can't say, hey, we're just going to close for a couple days and roll out this new menu, because you have all this product and you have all these people that know how to do all this stuff. And it's like it would just be easier to be like, hey, we're just going to stop that and do this new thing. So there's kind of a weird transition of you have to learn what's going on, also learn what bad and what good is happening. And then kind of figure out how you get through all the old stuff to get into the new stuff, and it's a lot. But it's kind of figuring out, but also you want to keep, you know, all the products fresh and good and get through that so you can bring in the stuff you want to use, but also, you know, change it as fast as possible because everybody likes the excitement of, oh, the new guy's here. What's he doing? What's the menu? Well, actually, you know, it takes a little bit to get to that situation. And with the holidays, it kind of slowed it down, the process even more. And now it's kind of finally slowing down. I mean, I don't want it to slow down, but it kind of needed to slow down to roll out the new shiny toys and all that.
We have a historic blizzard, freezing rain. It's 41
weeks.
This
week was nice. Negative
18
extra day
another.
Off.
But it is that interesting balance when you're looking at like starting, and it is, you can easily create excitement with an entirely new menu,
right.
Except now you're thinking of like, well, what about all of our regular customers or all the people who've been coming here for years now and the things that they love on the menu? I remember I used to be in beer sales and it would drive me nuts sometimes because, you know, you're trying to get your beer on tap and you're talking to the manager and you're like, okay, what about this beer? I have not seen this beer on tap anywhere in this entire city. Why do you have this on? They're like, oh, I have a regular that likes it. Like, okay, maybe that's
directly
too extreme to keep a beer on tap for the one regular, but it did make me realize that you go, yeah, regulars are very, very important.
They are.
When you are looking at that versus just being the new exciting thing,
right.
If you're thinking about like it from a business sense.
Yeah, because you need them to sit there and tread the waters with you too while you unroll this new thing. But I mean, that's huge. And I mean, change is, people hate change. Like, hey, we're just going to do this and do that. Well, that doesn't, this is what we used to do and we're used to this. And people fight you every step of the way, even if it's like, hey, we're going to actually make everything better. But it's like, you have to come along for the ride because we got to get
to that.
The
worst way. I know how to do the worst
way
really
well.
It's
like what they know. And
yeah.
It's like, what you said sounds good, but what about what we're already doing? That's pretty good, right?
Yeah,
it's like actually
a risky situation.
It's not because they went out and brought me in to do a thing, right? So let's see what I can do, right? So let's get to that point.
And how did you get into the industry in the first place? Whew.
All right, we gotta go way back.
Let's go all the way back.
So I grew up in a super small town, Wisconsin, and when I finished high school, everybody was like, "You gotta go to college. You gotta do college. You gotta go to college." It was either that or you work in the. It was a furniture company. It was your only option. Or your parents' farm is what you stayed on. So I was like, all right, go to college. But I had no idea what I wanted to go to college for. So I kind of just went with some friends to college, like tagged along. They knew what they wanted to go. I'm going to go do that. So I kind of tried a couple different colleges for a while, and I still don't like school. I never liked school, but I was like, oh, everybody's going to college. Let's do college. So I kind of goofed around pretty much at college, you know, did all the fun college things, but not the actual college thing, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm talking about. So I kind of did that, and then I just stopped school for a while, and I just worked, and I did just whatever to pay bills and pay rent and whatever. And then I had some friends move to the cities, and they had an extra room in their apartment, and I was kind of debating. I was interested in culinary school, and Le Cordon Bleu was heavy in all their commercials, so everything you saw was TV, radio. Oh, culinary school, come be a chef, do all this. I was like, ah, yeah, that sounds pretty good. You know, they got me with the commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, yeah, the opportunity came up. So I had a room available. School sounded all right. Cooking, that's got to be better than pen and paper, you know, school. And it actually was. I really enjoyed it. So I kind of went in there. My dad had always been big into cooking. He actually went to culinary school way back in the 60s. Hmm. Never actually became a professional chef. He actually joined the Air Force, but always loved cooking. So my love for food came from my dad. And then so I did the culinary school, and then I fell in love with cooking and the industry and all the things that still keep me in it. And I just kind of pursued all learning opportunities that were presented to me. So whatever restaurant opened up or anybody I met was like, where should I work? What, that kind of thing. And then that's the kind of path I took to sit here and talk to you right now.
And what was your first job right out of culinary school?
Right out of culinary school, I went to Nizwa and worked at Grandview Lodge, the big golf resort up there. And kind of that was a cool opportunity, cause, especially out of school, because they have like 6 or 7 different restaurants. So they kind of, as the new person, you got to go to each certain amount of time in each restaurant, and then you kind of found where you fit. Mm-hmm. And so I started in the pro shop, and I did all the ham and cheese sandwiches for the bev cart ladies, and did that, and then worked in the pizza kitchen, and then moved over to the fine dining. And I really fell in love with that, just the hospitality side kind of unfolded, and just seeing like how the elevated made it better. And I just love that. So then I kind of stayed that focus moving forward. And then after that, I kind of went to Colorado and worked in a super fine dining restaurant on top of a mountain. It was gorgeous, probably the most beautiful place I've ever been in my life. And then just kind of kept going from there.
So how did you find that job in Colorado? Because right? This happens a lot on this podcast. Yeah. It's like, I think when you're looking back on your own experience, or especially something about the food industry, just casually dropping like, yeah, I was working at this golf resort in 6 different restaurants, and then I was on top of a mountain in Colorado. How did these steps happen?
And so I've got two of those great stories in my culinary career. So one took me to Colorado, and one took me to the Virgin Islands. And then somehow I've ended up back in Minnesota, where if we look outside, it's freezing cold. I don't know why I came back, but I'm this here now and I love
this
it.
This is the 3-month stretch where I go, what are we all doing? Yeah. What are we all collectively doing?
Yeah.
But you end up on top of a mountain in Colorado from the resort. How did that happen?
Yeah, so top of Minnesota, the top of the mountain in Colorado. just the school at the moment had like a job placement thing that just always emailed you like opportunities. And I always signed up for the where can I go in the world ones. It was like just to see what's out there. Mm. And I reached out to the chef that was in the Colorado one, Bino's Cabin in Avon, Colorado. And he set up a phone call interview. And I was like, oh, all right, he just wants to talk to me. He probably didn't see that I'm in Minnesota and wants to come to Colorado. And we actually had a great conversation and chit-chat. And he's like, yeah, so just so you know, you got to relocate. You got to come out here. It's a seasonal thing. I'm like, that sounds not so bad. Sounds good. He's like, you want to come on and hang out for a weekend and we'll show you around? I'm like... I mean, you're hook, line, and sinker at that point. Like, you're going to pay for me to come to Colorado and check out this restaurant? Yeah, that sounds great. Let's do that. So I did that, and then I signed up for the job, and it was awesome.
I would have to imagine that's the type of place where they know that, like, if we get you out here, we're going to get you into the job.
just pack extra. You're probably not leaving.
bought you a one-way. I hope that's not a problem.
So that was a great opportunity. Just came out. I loved it there. I really left Colorado because of the seasonal work, because of the resort. It's like literally you're open and then you shut down for a month, almost 2 months sometimes in between season, which is great. But like when you're a young cook out there living in employee housing and the whole city shuts down, like if you don't plan properly, you're just kind of out there. Like the first 2 seasons, I just kind of moved back home and stayed with mom, which was great. But then last season, I kind of just saved up money and kind of traveled a little bit, which was awesome too. But then you blow through your whole savings account and you're like, I guess I gotta go back to work now.
Create this vicious cycle.
Yeah, that's how they keep you in Colorado.
And so how many seasons did you end up?
So it was 3 winters and 4 summers. So I went out there for a summer first and then 3 winters and 4 summers. So
I have a question for you. Is that you clarify that like fine dining is what you got really attracted to. At the time, did you have an idea that that's what you wanted to do? Or what was it that attracted you to fine dining?
I just think that at the time, it was just the level up. I knew that I didn't want to be making those sandwiches for the Babcards for the rest of my culinary career. But the fine dining, just the extra effort that went into it and that it was more detail-oriented just made it seem to make more sense. It's like, oh, this is why we're doing all these extra steps and we want the food to taste good and we're getting these high-end products. And it just seemed, all the extra. And, you got to wear the fancier coat. You get the clean apron, and servers look nicer. And you got to light the candles. Yeah.
To the golf cart.
Yeah.
And that seems to be. I'm very attracted to things like that too. And it doesn't even need to necessarily be fine dining, but like when you find somebody that's just passionate about what they're doing in general, and I think. I'm sure there's someone out there that makes sandwiches for golf carts. Don't get me wrong. I'm not shitting all over
they
that. Love it. But I think in most cases.
Hey, when I'm golfing, I love that sandwich.
Yeah. But, it's probably not a lot of people where it's their most passionate
they get
thing
up
in
and
the
they're
world.
Super excited to go. Yeah.
And then you find someone. And fine dining, I think not only is it the kitchen is probably more passionate, but also the people who are seeking it out.
Right.
You're going to find just more excitement all around.
Right.
So even though it's a lot harder work and it requires a lot more attention to detail, it seems easier. Yeah, maybe not the hours, the amount you sleep, but like the actual work itself is like as hard as it can be, it is more exciting.
Sure.
And so you did your seasons in Colorado, top of the mountain. Where did you go from there?
So then that brought me back to Minnesota. My mom was having health issues and my brother was still in Wisconsin. So I was like, maybe just be closer just to deal with stuff. You know, it's hard dealing with those kind of things over the phone. It's easier to be able to drive home and check in on that. So I came back did a little job searching, ended up at the St. Paul Hotel.
Oh, nice.
Downtown. Stayed there for a couple of years. And then that took me to my first stint at W.A. Frost, where I met Wyatt Evans. He had just taken over as the executive chef there. I think I was his first hire. So that's kind of a cool story, too. Just came up with Wyatt, learning the ropes. Super talented. I'm self-taught. He's still high up in the industry, still a good friend. Don't see as much as I'd like to, but yeah, still can reach out and get the questions answered, and he's awesome. But yeah, then so Frost was kind of my first experience with like a farm to table, which was the hot trendy topic at the time.
Yeah.
But we worked with a lot of local farmers, and it was cool to see ingredients coming in, their passion of like that passion thing again, but the farmers bringing you the carrots, the onions, the local greens. It's like, look what's fresh, look at this. And it's crazy, you know, the difference. It's like, you're spoiled in America, just how easily you can get anything any time of the year, but you forget that some of these things should only be eaten when they're fresh. Like, you can go to the store right now and buy strawberries, but you should probably just wait till July and August and get them, because they're more flavorful. But that was my first experience with that, and just fell in love with that. And then, again, that was fine dining, and crazy high volume, high pass phase. That patio, when it's packed, they have that second kitchen out on that patio for a reason. It's like doubles their seating. It's nuts. But everybody comes out. You know, Minnesota, it's like you're stuck in the winter for 10 months out of the year. And when you get those 2 months of sunshine, it's like everybody wants to be outside. So the patio's the place to go.
And as you were going throughout these kind of different stops along the way, did you start to build an idea of where you wanted to go in your culinary career? Or were you just kind of like in the moment and potentially jumping on opportunities if they came up? Or how far ahead are you thinking in your culinary career?
So looking back, I can say that I wasn't actually looking that far ahead. but I was excited for opportunities, and I kind of sought out like places that would add to my culinary repertoire, is what I like to say. Like, so at St. Paul Grill, I was doing all the steaks and all that kind of stuff. So, like, heavy steaks. At Frost, I started on the pantry side, so doing the salad and a little bit more garmage stuff and fancy knife work that wasn't quite appreciated at other places that I worked. Mm. And it was, like, you know, just attention to detail that you pick up on different things at different places. And it's so kind of every time I moved on, it was either to move up or to mostly just to learn something new, which I still love about culinary. I think there's... I don't think you can ever learn everything, and you can always learn something from somebody else. And it's so many different ways to even just peel a carrot, you know, it's crazy.
And that's,
I love,
that seems to be an interesting theme with a lot of people. And you'll notice I talk about it, but it's like the food industry. It is interesting how you see these themes kind of occur. And especially with chefs versus, like, I've talked to business owners, I've talked to, you know, people who have been more on that side of things. But when you talk to chefs specifically, it does seem to be that the people that move around a lot of it's based around the skills.
Yeah.
It's either I want to be around this person or I want to work on this skill. And you don't find a lot of people that go, I want to be an executive chef and I'm just going to only work at the title.
Right.
And it seems like a lot of people don't care as much about the title. They care much more about who am I working with. So is it a location or a chef I want to be working under or with, or what skills do I have, or what type of culinary, like type of food am I trying to learn that I don't currently know how? And over time, it's like with that mindset, all of a sudden you're like, I know how to do this. I know how to do that. And I'm sure I'm speaking not from experience, but from what I've heard, that it's extremely valuable as a chef that if someone's looking to hire you and you have that list of like, here's the 10 different things I've learned at the last two spots I was in that I can now do at a high level, chances are they're going to need at least one of those in their kitchen if it's somebody you want to work with.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what's great about the chef industry, culinary. It's, you can add things like that, or you can find something that you just fall in love with. You're like, if I love making pickles, maybe I'm just going to make pickles. Like,
I'm here. I'm a pickle guy now.
But, you know, you can pick that habit up, and you can't master it because there's so many different ways to do it. But you can learn that and then add that to what you're going to learn from the next person. But like you said, you can follow people. You know, there's chefs out there that have done it, that know what they're doing, that, you know, you can find the best butcher. You can find the best, you know, saute guy, sous vide guy, and whatever you want. It, you can learn it. And even if you're just there for a little bit, just to pick up a little bit of knowledge to add to your repertoire, it's insane. And yeah, that was a huge part when I was younger. I was lucky enough to work with lots of talented people that were either self-taught or were kind of doing the same thing looking back. And it's I still love that part.
Yeah.
You can still learn a lot from just everybody. It's great.
Yeah, and it's the people that seem to be like, I am going to be the executive chef versus like, I want to get really good at these skills. You start to, you kind of get exposed over time if you're not willing to put in the work and work your way up or bounce around to different places or work under people versus just like letting ego get in the way of like, right. No, I'm a chef. And I've had that conversation. Yeah. Like, what's the difference between a cook and a chef? And that can be a very heated the topic. Clipboard
paperwork.
So you get someone that's a pretty good cook at home and they're right. Like, I'm a bit of a chef. Right. And it's like, no, you're not.
Let's see your arms. Let's see the burns.
Yeah, exactly. Put your hand on this pan. Right. How long do you last?
No, yeah, it's true. And I think when you're younger, you think the idea of like getting that title is something that you want. And like, I think if you're going to stay in the industry, you're going to end up eventually being the sous chef, the executive chef. Some people don't want to do that. Some people want it. But it's, I think the idea when you're younger that you get that title and then magically everything falls into place for you. It's like, it's a lot of work. When you get the management thing, it's not so much, cooking is still huge, but it's like all the other things that come with it. Like even as a assistant manager or whatever, you have to like all the personnel issues, all the ordering issues, you got to break down food cost and, you know, scheduling the dishwasher and maintenance on the dishwasher, all the things that you don't think that go into a restaurant, picking out the right silverware. When you order water glasses, make sure they're the same size as the water glasses you already have. It's like, it sounds stupid, but when they delivered 4 cases of the wrong water glass, it's like, that's kind of a problem.
And it's all of these collective things that I've always said that there's this weird thing when you walk into a food establishment that you can kind of get a sense of like, is this place going to be good or not? It's not always true, but like there's just this, all these small details add up, the attention to detail, right. the obviously the cleanliness of it. That would be the first right. obvious one, but all these kind of small attention to details. It's that quote I really like. That's like how you do everything how you do anything is how you do everything.
Right.
So some people might be like, well, it doesn't matter what size the fork is right here, or if the glass, it's pretty similar to what we have, but it just like creates this overall feel
right.
that an executive chef needs to be thinking about outside of just like, is the menu good right now?
Right.
And it's,
yeah, the menu gets moved down the list of priorities until, you know, all of a sudden it's like, hey, actually it's not good. We need to make it more. But there's so many things that go into a restaurant. It's crazy. Like just the little things all the time. And it's a lot. But it's awesome. It's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
All the things, all the hats you get to wear daily.
So we're hopefully approaching spring now.
Right.
How far ahead do you start to plan a menu? And then this is something I'm curious about is, what is that process like? Because obviously I think a lot of people are just like, you come up with the menu and then you go, this is what we're doing. But there's so many people involved that obviously that can't be the case. So I'm curious how that process looks from here's where I start with it to here is the actual day we're launching these either entirely new menu, new food menu items or specials. How do you approach that, and how far out are you doing it? And what are those steps that it takes?
That's a lot of questions.
It's a lot of questions, but it's like rolling out a new menu.
Let me try to break it down.
Yeah, rolling out a new menu seems right. so overwhelming right. to
Especially
me.
Especially when you're doing like a whole change. It's a lot.
Yeah,
specials are fun. But.
We have 5 coffees we roast year round. Right. And like, I'm trying to picture like, all right, Rob, you have to shut all those down and then right. launch new 5 new ones or right. replace 3 of them. Right. I'd be like, I have no idea like, where
I
to start.
Because
And so it's so many questions because I'm trying to wrap my head around this process. So I'm curious how you look at that and break it down.
So I think you start with, I know where I started was, what kind of stuff do I want to put on the menu? Like, what do I want people to come in and be like, if they know my name's associated with it, do I want them eating? Which is, I don't want my name on everything, but like if people come in and who's the chef back there? I'd be excited that they loved it. But part of it's like reaching out to vendors was the big part for me when I started already, just to see like what's going to be available in a couple months. What like product forecasting, you know, like the rain in California is affecting strawberries and cabbage and all that good stuff. So it's like, should I plan around that or should I look at different stuff? And then working with just the different companies to price match things. And then reaching out to, like, the protein guys, like the local farms. I've been talking with Pat at Wild Acres. He's, like, using his duck right now on the menu, but, like, going into spring, I want to use his chicken. And it's, like, working with him, like, he actually grows chickens for you. So, like, if you say you want to do chicken, how many are you going to sell a week? And, like, forecasting. It's all forecasting, which it's all a made-up number. You hope that you're busy all the time, but it's, like, I hope so, too. But if you, lie to him and he's growing chickens running all over his farm, I'd feel awful. But I mean, he's awesome. He knows what he's doing.
Forecasting is the ultimate word in business that I go, can we all, this is completely made up.
Right.
Well, oh, you're forecasting that? I go, I can forecast it what you want. Right. I don't know. It hasn't happened yet.
If you say it with confidence, you're like, yeah, I know we're going to do this. I'm forecasting ahead. Yeah. But I mean, and then especially at frost, it's like if the patio's busy, your numbers are double than what they are if you can only see when it's raining outside, you know? So it's like, am I planning for 240 people or am I just planning for 100 people? It's like, that's part of it. And then
you must hate weather people.
Just buying up a whole bunch of umbrellas.
Because it's a lose-lose. It's like if they're wrong about it being rainy and then it's sunny, you're like, I'm out of everything.
Right.
And then if it's the flip side, you're like, well, I have all this excess food.
I just don't even watch weather. We're just going to hope it's sunny all the time. Just
finger in the mouth, stick it out the window, go, all right, we're going
sun
live.
Sun came up, nice, we're good. Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. And then, you know, making sure you sell things that make the company money at the end of the day. You know, the owner wants to get paid. I want to keep getting paycheck. That's always nice. But then, you know, you want to have the bar customers happy. So you have to have a small bar menu. You have to have entrees so you can still be the fine dining establishment. You have to have some small plates so everybody can come and hang out on the patio and snack and drink some wine or water or whatever they drink, you know, and enjoy the sunshine. So it's like having that variety on the menu and not going too heavy. Like, can't just do a whole pork belly all the time, and you got to have a salad, which is, you know, always new to me because I just want to eat meat all the time. Yeah, so, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that go into it, and it's like, you can't just say, this is what we're going to do. You have to plan it, cost it, make sure you know how to do it. And then, like, getting people involved, like the sous chefs, I want to get their opinion so they want to work, you know, so they feel like they're adding. Because I know when I was coming up, it's always nice that, hey, what do you think we should do with this dish? Or, hey, what do you think we should add? Or is there something you want to cook? Or is there, what are you watching on the Food Network? You want to try something now?
Yeah.
You know, so all those kind of things that you take into consideration. At the end of the day, it should be my final say, but it's like, you want people to be excited to come to work, and then you want the customers to be excited that you have cool stuff on the menu. And it doesn't have to be culinary altering. A good steak's a good steak, a good burger's a good burger.
Yeah. You know?
Stuff like that.
And it's then, like those types of items, you go, these sell. People
Well, as not much as you hate cooking a burger every day, it's like, hey.
The burgers right now are the biggest thing.
And they're always trying to eat burgers, wings, you know.
I tell my friends, I go, if you meet a chef, whatever you do, if you've been to the restaurant, do not say, I love your burger as the first thing.
Yeah, you better load it, because if you messed up a burger, man,
you go,
probably should be doing something else.
Yeah, that'd be like, congratulations on being alive to a chef. Like, that's all it really is.
Yeah, but it's crowd pleasers. You know, you got to have that stuff. You don't love it. I mean, at one point, you love eating a burger.
I love eating a burger.
Right. Like, so I'm going to get a burger when I go, but like, it's on there because it's going to sell. And
yeah, if I'm going to a place once, I'm not getting the burger,
it's
right?
Yeah, hopefully there's other things you come back for.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, the lunch crowd needs a burger, so when it's on the menu, it's good.
How much do you have to consider, like, the team you have in your kitchen in terms of the menu you're putting together? Because in theory, if there's something that, like, you've been in this industry so long, there might be something that to you is second nature of, like, oh, this is so easy to me, and then you go to your team and they go, I've never done this before, or I don't know how to do it. How do you approach a scenario like that?
Man, I think teaching is like one of the hardest things. It's one of the coolest things in the industry because you can like, hey, how do you do this? But like, if you're a good teacher, you can teach somebody how to do whatever you're trying to do. But sometimes you just know things so well that you can't express how to can you cook it this way? Well, I think I did it that way. So I think a big part of it's like making sure that you like, if I'm going to put something on the menu, I know what how I want it done and how I'm going to teach you how to make it. But hopefully the cooks that are there are the cooks that can keep up and do that kind of food. I don't think we're going to do anything too crazy to whatever. But I mean, part of it is, you know, you want those young people that want to learn, and then you want those guys that I know quite a bit. I can do that. But also they're excited by hopefully something different.
Yeah, because there are certain things that it's just like, it's, you get such a feel for it. It's like that 10,000 hour rule that's like, once you've done it, you go, it actually gets harder to explain that. You go, how do you know this?
It
like,
is.
I don't know. I just, it like, is. If I'm watching a shot of espresso pour, I have a pretty, pretty dang good idea how it's going to taste just based on, you know, how thin are the legs that are pouring out of the espresso machine, the color of it, the foam, like everything. Like even someone that's just spending enough time around coffee starts to realize that. So that's kind of a trivial example. Yeah. But in cooking, there's so many factors.
No, that's like a perfect example because like you're watching it and you're going to know. But if you were like trying to teach me, you'd be like, you probably wouldn't cover all the things that you should cover just because in your head, you know.
That one's probably going to be astringent. Right. You go, how do you know? You go, well,
Because I just know.
Look at it. Like,
because I just know. And that's a great, that's a great point. Because it's like when you're that knowledgeable, it's like being able to step back and teach somebody that it's easier said than done. Because like, why can't you just do it like I just told you? Or why can't you just follow the direction? It's actually, you missed a couple little things in there that would have explained it better.
And it's like hard to put yourself sometimes back in the shoes of the, and I think that's something that I try to think about a lot, because I think relating specifically to coffee is like, so this is way off topic because I want to continue into what you're doing, but go. Like this blew my fucking mind that 2% of people in America right now are making pour over coffee at home. And I was like, all coffee roasters and cafes are marketing only pour over coffee. And I'm like, oh,
only to 2%.
We're marketing to 2% of people. And this was just the last episode. So I'm really? Just repeating myself, but this has really been ingrained in my head.
Right.
And so if you, from like what we're talking about, you go, but I would never even think about just using a drip coffee brewer. And you're like, but that's what people like. And, right. and so if we're relating it back to what we're talking about, sometimes you've been doing something so long that you go, well, I don't even need to explain this because right. you know how to do it or why not to do something
and
like that.
And then there's that person in the back raising their, actually, I don't. Can you maybe just slow down a little bit?
They're probably not raising right. their hand. Right. They go, I feel so stupid. I'm going to YouTube this
like,
later.
Yeah, you're like Googling it as you're finishing talking. Yeah. No, it's a perfect example, though. It's like you, especially as an educator, I think growing up or coming up in the industry, it's like you learn so much from people, but there's a lot of people that know a lot. And when you ask them questions, they give you a quick answer and they just assume, okay, you got to know. But you also need to be able to break it down and be like, hey, actually, hold up. Can you explain so I can do this again without asking you? That'd be great.
Yeah. Through all of your years and all the various roles you've held and different types of kitchens you've been in, do you have one specific type of cooking or something that gets you the most excited, or has it been kind of a combination of all these different things?
It's been a lot of combo. I mean, I think new things always get you excited, but I think you fall back to what you learn and know, and you go back to your comfort level or whatever. But I don't have a specific. I kind of just love cooking, and it's more for the audience. Like if somebody's coming over for dinner, I'd be like, "Hey, what do you want to eat? What's your favorite kind of thing?" And then I kind of like figure out how I'm going to do it that way.
And what do you cook the most for yourself?
It's not that good. All right. You'd be sad.
This is another one of those predictable things.
Right. My fridge is full of fermented things, and because that's always fun to play around with. And then it's usually empty until I know somebody's coming over or if I'm cooking for somebody.
It's another one of those stereotypes that's there for a reason.
Right. Well, I mean, part of it is, you get a snack at work when you're leaving or whatever, which is nice because they always have better food than I want to have at my house. And then part of it's I'm not home that often.
Mm.
And cooking for one after cooking for hundreds, it sounds dumb, but it's like I always make way too much of anything, cooking
and
at home.
Part of it's got to be, I've never thought
and
about
there's
this.
There's no dishwasher at my
that's,
house.
I was just going to say, part of it's got to be the convenience. Like, because when I cook at home, I'm like, I eat really fast. I'm like, that took me 4 minutes to eat. I just cook for a half hour, and now I've got 8 dishes in my sink. And then also just like the inconvenience of having to deal with all the different things and my tiny oven at
and
home.
If you're playing around with something, you got 2 pans going, or a pot, and a blender, and a strainer, and it's like
you're unplugging my this
little
to get
house
this to
dishwasher. My little house sink is like it's full overflowing, and then I'm like, food was good, but man, I don't want to clean this up. It's part of it. You get spoiled at work, You realize it when the dishwasher calls in sick and you have to wash all the dishes, but it's that's part of it for sure.
So as you're taking on this new role, obviously very recent, like you just got there in December, right?
Yep.
And now we're approaching the end of February. Do you go into a role like this, like being executive chef at a place that's just like a lot of people love WA Frost for a wide number of reasons. Do you walk into it with a goal like of what you're looking to do, or is it very seasonal, like in terms of your personal career or in terms of WA Frost as a whole? Do you look at like the Twin Cities food scene as a whole and where you want to be and where you want WA Frost to be, or do you tend to focus more on just what's happening inside those walls?
I think it's a little bit of both for sure. Like obviously personally, I maybe don't say it out loud as much, but I kind of want to get recognized. I want people to come in and be like, man, that was really good. I wonder who came up with that or who came up with this menu and, excited to come back and try more things or if we're running specials, you're like, oh, that last week was real good. Maybe if we go back next month, it'll be awesome. I think part of that. And then part of it is just, you know, the things that you get by becoming older. I want to be that mentor person that I had growing up. You know, I mentioned Wyatt earlier at Frost. I kind of want to get Frost back to that place because I know when I first started, it was kind of a doorway into the culinary world. A lot of talented people have passed through there. I know when I worked there, when I go back and just go through the list of people and where they are now, they're like all way up and running things and doing cool stuff. And they're people you want to know and want in your kitchen. And it's like, hopefully we become that breeding ground again for talented chefs, people to grow, doing good food, you know. And it's like, it's not just me, but it's like, I want to create that environment.
Yeah.
And get back to that.
And that sounds obvious, but it puts you in an interesting position because if you're the type of person that's like, I want to train everybody to be in the best position to succeed, they're going to get to a position where they can move up and probably going to take the same kind of path you've been taking, right, of moving to the next place, learning a new skill. So as obvious as it might sound, there are some people that are like, no, you're here. Right. I want to train you only to do enough to get really good here, right, and keep you here. And it's back when I did beer sales, it was Sam Adams and Jim Cook was the guy that started it. And he overinvested in training so much. And one of his competitors was like, you're spending all this money on training. Aren't you worried that you're spending way too much on this? And then he said, well, I'd be more worried if I didn't train them and they were still here.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's part of the industry. People are always looking for the next opportunity. People want to grow. I don't want to hold anybody back. I was given opportunities growing up, and I think, you know, hopefully they're happy and they want to stay and put in the time. Hopefully it's more than a month or so. You know, hopefully it's a year or something. I don't want to be hiring cooks all the time. But, you know, there's always opportunities. There's the same thing that brought me to different restaurants. It's people are going to grow. People know friends that are opening places, or they want to go cook at a fancier place or better hours, or money's always a thing. You know, it's like you can't give everybody all the things all the time. It's like hopefully you have a place that people are like, yeah, that's where I want to go to work, and that's cool. And hopefully they get the things that I want to provide. So they're learning. They get to work with products they want to cook with. They're happy with their coworkers, at least tolerate them.
Yeah. And I think in the Twin Cities food beverage scene, Folly, we've been around for like 5 years. You meet a few people, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm kind of one degree. Like, it's such a small, it's not even a small community, but it is a very, very tight community that is also kind of small.
Right.
But, it doesn't make sense because it's not a tiny city by any, when you put Minneapolis and St. Paul, right, you got a couple million people, but all of a sudden you're like, how do I always run into the same people? I mean, we've met previous to this at a food building.
Right.
When we were just talking about hot sauce.
Right.
And I was like, wait a second. So Yia told me, he's like, hey, did you know Grant's taking over? I was like,
2 degrees of separation.
Oh, wait, shit, I know him.
And he knows you.
Yeah.
No, it is. It's a tight crew. And I mean, the people that have come up in the industry, they know the same people. You know, there's like, I mean, I work for Tim McKee, and Tim McKee knows everybody, or everybody's worked for him, or somebody's worked for him, you know. That's a great example. And I just worked at Demi, and Gavin Kaysen is the same kind of thing. He's doing the same thing. So at Demi, like Adam Ritter and Alan Labine are super talented. They know everybody in town too. And it's a cool thing to say that you can know people and hopefully they speak well of you. But it's a great community. I think that's just the way the restaurants are. You work 14-hour days with these people all the time. It's like they're your second family. Sometimes your first family, you won't admit to your first family, but that's what it is. And you just build relationships that you can't really build.
And as people leave kitchens, having learned skills and getting, you know, quote unquote promotions or moving to a place to work with someone else to learn something new, the more people that are coming out of your kitchen looking nice,
right,
all of a sudden your reputation gets better with all of these other chefs and these other restaurants. And then as potential people from their kitchens are like, hey, I'd like to move up. You go, oh, you need to go work for Grant over at WA Frost. Right. He's doing this. It sounds like perfect for what you might want to do. And that's where this like community, you start to learn. Well, I should say, I start to learn very quickly. I go, oh, I start to kind of understand how everybody knows each other so well.
Yeah. Cause you get those texts. You're like, hey, do you know so-and-so? He just applied for a job. I heard he worked with you back in the day. And like, yeah, you want to have, it's relationships you don't even know you have that they get checked up on later. And it's like, yeah, you want those. So hopefully you're building good ones and have those kind of kitchens that you're coming out
of. Yeah, and then the daunting side of that is, like, you can ask any chef or any cook in the Twin Cities their opinion on every single restaurant or every single chef. Even if they haven't been there or had the food, they'll have an opinion.
Oh, of course they do. Of course they do.
And then, so it's like, is that your opinion? Or is this like this group mentality, like collective thinking that forms because it's such a tight community within the Twin Cities? Well,
I think that's a lot of it. And I think a lot of people need to form their own opinions. But it's crazy, the group mentality of like, oh, I heard this restaurant, blah, blah, blah. And it's good. It's not good. And it's, my service was bad. And they didn't pour the right drink. You know, it's crazy how fast that word can spread. But it works the other way, too. It's so good. It's so talented. Those guys are doing crazy good things over there or something, you know?
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
And I've been trying to do less of that because I was so guilty of it. Because part of it is, like, you start to feel cool.
Right.
You're like, oh, I got the inside scoop on this, and I heard it from this reputable person. But then you're like, wait, did they actually go? Or did they hear it from someone else? Instagram. Yeah, exactly.
I just checked in, so I look cool.
Yeah, and there were some places I hadn't been that I go, you know what? Despite, obviously, I'm not going to name names.
Right,
be
careful.
Savage careful. Right now, but like there are a few places I've been recently where I go, you know what? I actually haven't been there. Right. I've just kind of heard.
Yeah.
And I had like these amazing experiences because I go, oh, this is actually really good. And you start to realize that, I mean, as a chef, you know that it's like your opening day, it's going to be radically different than 3 months down the road.
Yeah.
And so you went, oh, yeah, it was this, it was that. And then 3 months later, you go back and you're like, oh, that, it's now almost a different restaurant in the sense that they, not just the chef. And that is where it gets interesting as an executive chef, is kind of the public perception. This is all reflecting the chef.
Like where the line gets blurred. Like,
yeah. And so it's
the
like
service, was it the ambiance? Was it the food? Was it the,
exactly,
what role did you play in all that?
Yeah. Or just, and the execution of the whole thing, like that all kind of is, that's the kind of the weight you bear as the executive chef, especially if it's like, hey, we just got this new chef, come on by.
Hopefully when it's good, you're like, oh yeah, that was my team. When it's bad, you're like, oh yeah, that was my fault probably. It wasn't my fault. You can't say that.
Yeah, anytime it's good, you're like, that's me, baby.
Right.
Yeah.
That'd be nice, but
what are you most excited about with like trends happening in terms of like food trends? Is there anything you're looking at going like, I really want to incorporate this into what I'm doing? Or are you pulling on stuff that you have been doing that you like excites you the most?
Yeah, I think not so much trends. I don't think, so we've kind of had the discussion between the managers and the owners at Frost. Like there's been a lot of change to what it used to be to what it is now and like what direction it should actually go and what part my should be in that. So like, I think we're going to go back to, like, comfort food classics. So people, things people recognize and also associate with the building and the patio and then make it patio season type, you know, food, shareable kind of things. We have a great wine program and an NA program, all that over there. So we want to emphasize that. We also want to have things that go along with that. So, like, snackable food, shareable food that you can, we want you to hang out on the patio.
Yeah.
Come hang out. So I think that's kind of the direction we're going. And then just making sure that we build the relationship. I mentioned Wild Acres earlier. There's a bunch of farmers. I don't need to go through the whole list, but building those relationships and highlighting their products and then making sure we're using them appropriately so we can make great food.
And sometimes that's more of a challenge to say, we need to create something that's not just all the latest trends. We want to create something that's lasting because it's not always, I think the, like, Star Tribune just did an article about, like, the Kenwood. Like, you don't hear about the Kenwood a lot in terms of, like, being flashy and, like, oh, my God, they're doing this and they got this going on over here. But it's always around, and you're just like, yeah, of course it is. It's the Kenwood.
Right. And you would assume not.
Exactly. Right. Versus, like, some of these restaurants that you hear about all so much for 3-6 months, right, and then all of a sudden you just, hey, what? Oh, they're,
what happened?
They're not around anymore, or they totally shifted the name and the concept and all this and that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is more difficult to look at, like, how do we just execute, like, classic comfort food or these classic recipes.
It's not as easy as it sounds.
Exactly. Especially when you go back to, like, thinking about the regulars, and you're like, ooh, this has been on the menu for...
Why is it on the menu? Because it sells and it's good. We got that one right.
You were there like a decade ago, and you're like, this is the same thing. I think I can make it better, but we have customers that
change
have been
one thing on it, then everybody's going to uproar. And even if it is better, they're like, it's different.
Different.
I don't like it. I'm going somewhere else. Yeah, it's a battle for sure. And you have to take that in consideration, but then you also have to be, I think, confident enough in what your goal and your direction is,
yeah,
for sure, which is it's a daunting task for, yeah, sure. Like spring menu, like you said, changing everything. It's going to be fun.
And I follow you on Instagram, so I know you're a football fan. So I'm going to use this analogy.
Just a little bit.
I
mean,
fantastic, by the way.
Right, thank you.
The game day fits. The game day fits for the Vikes are on point. But I'll use this analogy that I'm curious about. It's like new head coach comes in, right? Usually they clear house and they bring in all their new people. How does it work? Obviously, it's not going to be the same across the board, but how is it working for you in this scenario? Like, you're now the head coach of the kitchen. Are you bringing in your own new team, or are you coming in and kind of fitting with some of the, like, the sous chef or in the line cooks and the service team? How do you kind of come in and fit, or is it bringing in a lot of your own people as well?
I wish I had a whole lot of my own people to bring in. Cooks are hard to find these days.
Yeah.
And good ones are even harder, you know. But I think my thing was to come in and kind of meet everybody and figure out what they do, kind of where they want to be. Are they happy with where they're at? Do they see fitting into what I'm discussing and talking about? And then also their reaction to, like, changing things. It's like, okay, we got to change some of this stuff. Again, everybody fights you on change unless they're, like, super excited about the end goal. But it's like, how do they react to how this new menu item or this special? And then figuring out, can they cook like they say they can cook, or they have good attitudes is huge. Like, do these people I want to hang out with every day or cook with every day, or interactions with servers is huge. You know, you got to have a happy back of the house, you know, to put out good food, you know. And I think that's huge. I think that's.
And it does have to be a challenge to, like, suggest change, especially because I think as an executive chef, you're probably much more in the books than most people in terms of the financials. How many units of this are we selling? Like, all the ingredients that are involved with it. Is it a cost-effective item to have? Does it make sense on paper?
Right.
Versus if you're a server or if you are customer-facing, that one regular, this beer, that we're keeping this beer on tap because he comes in every day, and you're like, well, we sell, okay, 6 or 7 pints of this a week then.
Right.
Really. And so in their eyes, they're going, oh, no, this is really popular because this person loves it this much, where you're like, but the numbers don't add up. So you're using, like, this anecdotal evidence versus, right, here are the actual numbers. And they might be, well, you don't know our customers like we do. I'm out there every day. And you're like, well, I actually got your customers in an Excel file here, and it is directly contradicting what you say.
So part of that is crazy what people think they know, like, arguing about, yeah, we can't change that because people buy it, and then, oh, we only sell 6 pints of that beer a week. So actually, that's not a thing, but they'll fight you to death on it because they think that they're probably the one to deal with that regular every time.
Yeah.
And then also, you can't just spew numbers like, oh, the food costs on this, we can't run that item because people want to cook what they want to cook, and they want to cook good food, hopefully. And then, so as the person that sees all those numbers, you have to break it down and you have to know it, but then you have to confidently say, hey, we're running this because it's what we want to run. It fits with our goal of what we want the menu to head the direction, but then also, you know, just have that there and then fit into your menu and then get people excited by it. But man, you get all directions when you're like, oh, we can't change that. We can't. So for instance, we had a bread appetizer that was a pretty sad version of a bread appetizer on the menu when I started. And I'm like, nobody likes putting this on the dish. It looks sad when it leaves the kitchen. And like, everybody was like, oh, everybody orders it. And then I was like, I think people order because it's the cheapest thing on the menu. I don't think they actually want
interesting
bread. And so we changed it. And the first week everybody was, oh, where is it? And I'm like, have customers asked for it, or you just think they want it? And we've gone a couple months now, and we're still not there, and we're still doing business.
It's sometimes it's not even that they're wrong. They're like, oh, no, this does sell a lot, right, but the reason why.
Right, there's more to it than.
Yes, all they see is.
Because it was the easiest thing to sell, or whatever. People think they want bread.
And we're in Minnesota, so 99% of the time when you come by and go, how is everything? They're like, that's great. And then the second you walk away,
they're Yelp leaving you a bad review.
Yeah, I'll just go to Yelp.
My server keeps yelling at
me. I'll just go to Yelp and let them know that's what they want.
Yeah.
And
they much prefer
it's like that old, like, statistic that, like, it's always like the second cheapest wine is like always one of the best sellers because you don't want to just get the cheapest wine.
You don't
want
to look like the cheapskate.
Yeah.
So like, oh, go down one more.
And you start talking to people on the sales side of wine and they're like, that's the spot you want.
It's all that stuff that you have to take into consideration. It's like the regulars want it, the servers want it. Is it actually a good item? Are we making money on it? Is it what you want, like, to project your menu? Like, because, you know, I don't get to go to the table every time and be like, hey, this is what I made you. It would be cool, but it's not. So it's like, it's the food is speaking for the company. And it's like, you want it to give the message you're giving. And you want it to build on the experience. I mean, we're in the hospitality business. Like, we want the experience overall to be awesome. And we want your memory of your dinner. You don't need to remember every single dish. I mean, hopefully you do. You probably took pictures and put it on Instagram, but you want it to be memorable. You had a good time, and you want all of it to feed into the whole experience, not just that one thing.
When are you going to roll out the new spring menu? Ooh.
So we've had meetings on it. There's a couple dates circled on the calendar.
Okay.
I think we're shooting for April 15th.
Nice.
Barring no holdbacks, I think June or May 1st, it should be all in place, ready to go.
Yeah, and spring in Minnesota is a very, very subjective term. Right.
Hopefully the sun's out by then. You know?
Yeah, even if the sun's out, there's a pile of snow in front of my place right now.
It might still be there.
Yeah, the plow's pushed to my
corner. It might
snow
at the end of April, too, so you never know.
I can still be sledding in May, I think. Is there an item that you can reveal yet that you're potentially working on, or you got to say, join me in April or potentially May to see
I mean,
it?
I feel like I should say, join me in April.
Yeah, okay. That's totally fair.
No, there's some good things coming. I think some things that people will know and associate with Frost, and then I think some people that'll be like, "Ooh, that's a little different." But
it's awesome.
We're gonna enjoy eating this, I think.
And I think just your approach, just thinking about asking ahead to suppliers of not just what do you have, but like what's the best at this time of the year. Obviously, that's the essence of farm to table, but that term has gotten abused much.
I mean, I hesitated saying it, but
no, but
people know what it is.
But see, that's the thing. It's like it's one of those things where the idea, like 10 years ago,
it sounds so simple. It's like, oh, just eat stuff when it's fresh. But it's like, it's also easy to just buy things that are available all the time because they're available all the time.
And when you're talking about W.A. Frost doing it 10 years ago, it's way ahead of its time. Then people see it and they go, oh, we can use this as a marketing term. Technically, all food comes from a farm.
Right.
And everywhere is technically farm to table. Yeah. But the actual idea of reaching out ahead of time, not just what do you have, but what's going to be the best tasting at this time of the year, so that from the get-go, you're looking and forming a menu around that. That, to me, is just a really cool way that you're not saying, I want this on the menu, make it work. You're letting the season, the farms, something as simple as the rainfall in certain areas of the country is going to affect if you're going to have strawberries that year. It's very cool to me.
There's a lot to look at. And I mean, if you can plan accordingly, you should be able to do some cool stuff. And then just taking everything into consideration. Obviously, you can't do, I mean, you can, but with the volume that Frost does, it's real hard to implement all those all the time.
Yeah.
But I think if you start with that goal and then try not to deviate until you absolutely have to.
That's awesome. Well, I'm really excited to see it. I really appreciate you taking the time. I was really excited when I heard that news, and I can't wait to make it out there. And that patio is absolutely epic.
Come chill on the patio.
Gonna have to come chill on the patio with the new spring menu and finally see the new reveal of it.
Right.
And behind the door of going, okay, which one's the item that which ones are the one that you think are going to be the ones that they see that you hang your hat on as Grant Nelson and as W.A. Frost.
Right. Yeah, no, it should be exciting.
That's awesome.
I'm excited.
Well, I'll end it like I do every other episode and say, have a...